Hello from Pie, Ohio.
Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say Code Monkey very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do Code Monkey think?
Hello and welcome to From Python Import Podcast. We did a little recording down at Pie, Ohio.
Ooh, what's Pie, Ohio, Mike?
It's a regional Python conference held in Columbus every year.
Okay, down at the OSU campus there?
Yeah, they hold it in the OSU Student Center every year, and it's grown quite a lot.
Okay, I actually made them a logo once upon a time, and finally got to go this year, so
yeah,
I was super excited.
You made an appearance.
After many years, yeah. So it's a free conference, right?
It's entirely free. There's usually t-shirts or something for sale, but the conference itself is free, and the quality of the talks is really good.
Yeah, it attracts a lot of the top talent from not just Ohio, but the surrounding region, and even some folks from outside of there.
Yeah, I think we had people in from Virginia and California this year.
Yeah, so what are we going to talk about? What's the rundown for this episode?
We got the organizers of Pie, Ohio, Catherine Devlin, Eric Fleur, and Brian Koslow to sit down and talk to us a little bit about where Pie, Ohio's been and what's going on in the future.
Awesome. Well, let's get to it then, shall we?
Let's go.
All right. See you on the flip side. Why did I just wave to the phone? Welcome back to From Python Import Podcast. I'm here with Dave Stanek, Mike Crute, and Ben Smith, as well as some illustrious guests. Can you guys introduce yourselves?
Hey, I'm Catherine Devlin. I'm Chair Emeritus of Pie, Ohio.
I'm Eric Fleur. I'm the current and outgoing Chair of Pie, Ohio.
And I'm Brian Koslow. I'm one of the committee members for Pie, Ohio this year, and I've been working on actually making Pie, Ohio Incorporated a real nonprofit corporation.
Woohoo! All right, welcome, guys. So we thought while we're here, it would be kind of fun to talk about the history of Pie, Ohio, where it's been, where it's going.
Okay, well, let's see. 1 year at PyCon, several of us Ohio folks bumped into each other, and Dave, you were one of them, I remember for sure. I don't remember who else.
I do remember.
Yeah, and we started kind of, you know, fantasizing about just a minute, you know, I wish we could have something like this in Ohio.
Why do we have to travel so far to do this?
That's right, and why do we have to wait for a year in between and everything? So, and before we went home, we were at least sort of planning that we were going to do it, and crazily enough, we decided that we were going to go for it that very summer, and threw it together, and it was, you know, nowhere near this large or organized or anything, but we managed to pull it off, and that first one was at the Columbus Public Library downtown, and it got, like, somewhere around 80 people or something?
Yeah,
it was respectable
for what it was.
And the other interesting thing is, at that point, there was no Columbus Python user group. We chose Columbus because it was kind of in between where all of the other organizers lived. So we just kind of like built it and they came. And a lot of the people who bumped into each other there said that they needed a Columbus group. And pretty soon there was a Columbus group.
So I started it.
Yes.
Based on that.
Yes.
I didn't know that bit.
Yeah.
Central Ohio Python?
Yeah, from that? Yeah, that came from the creators met at Pie, Ohio.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. You would think that you need a local group and then you can have a regional conference, but in this case we did it the other way around.
That one was a lot of fun because we didn't have a whole lot of room. We only had one room, physical room for the main talks.
Right.
And you pretty much went in and didn't come out till it was over. That was basically the conference.
Yeah. Which was okay, although one, you know, I certainly was happy to see that in later years we got more space for people to do the hanging out, not watching a talk, which to me is maybe the most important part of a conference, is when you're skipping talks because the people around you are too interesting.
Yeah, the hallway conversations are always the fun part.
Yeah,
especially since we've got such a crack AV squad that's getting all the video now. You don't feel guilty about skipping a talk when you know you'll be able to see it later on.
Yes.
Carl's invaluable, and I think it's one of the big, you know, the big positives of Pie, Ohio is the fact that everything's recorded. I mean, that doesn't happen in most conferences, and most conferences, if they do record video, you have to pay for it. So I think that's a really cool thing about Pie, Ohio.
Yeah. Now, where does the video end up when it's live?
I think Carl puts it on like Blip TV, and then there's PiVideo.org now.
Okay.
That the videos, all the videos are indexed there. They're not stored there, but they're indexed. But I think he puts it on Blip TV, and I hope somewhere he has a backup of the source videos.
But I would look for it at PiVideo because that has abstracts and all that wonderful metadata right there. So.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
It's got a nice search interface too. It makes it easy to drill down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And as you know, there's a big difference between something that is recorded by a real polished crew versus somebody just said, oh yeah, I'll record it, and it's
right.
almost unwatchable if you just... Trying to do amateur recording is really brutal on anybody who's going to
yep.
try to watch it.
Right.
Yeah.
And Carl's the guy responsible for all the actual PyCon mm-hmm. videos too, right?
Yes,
yep.
and he did Sci-Pi this year, and... He's pretty much the, just like Elegant Stitches is the official Python t-shirt maker, Carl is kind of the official Python videographer.
Yeah.
So we're actually pretty lucky then to have him
yeah.
be able
yeah,
to
very
here
fortunate.
And do that.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. And
okay.
he's in Chicago,
yeah.
so.
Yeah, awesome. So real close.
Yep.
Great. So talked about 80 people at the first PyOhio, and where are we now? How have the years changed it? How's it grown?
Year two, I think we had like 120, 130.
Yeah.
Year three, I think we were like 150, 160, if I remember.
That sounds
175,
right.
something like that. And then last year, we were just shy of 200, so I just tell people 200. And this year, it looks like we're going to be well over 200, so total registrations.
Awesome. I think I saw a tweet that was like 225, maybe,
yeah.
something like that. So.
Yeah, I think we ended up with actually like 260 actual registrations, of which not everybody attended. But
right.
Yeah, we're it's amazing.
Did you count the walk-ins in the reg count?
We haven't done
no,
any of that.
No,
so, yeah,
no,
so
but that's why I was saying.
We had a significant number of walk-ins.
Yeah,
this year
so,
again, so,
yep. And I think one of the nice things about PyOhio being free is that you do have people that... You know, summer students, especially being at Ohio State, you know, they're interested and they just come up and there's no reason that they, you know, can't learn something.
That's pretty great. So I remember when I went to my first PyCon in DC, there were about 300 people there. So how does it feel that this little regional mini PyCon is now like almost where PyCon was 10 years ago or so?
Yeah, I mean, we just have a lot of great people. I mean, I think, you know, PyOhio has been very fortunate that we have people that are willing to spend their time, spend their money, and make it great. I mean, because really PyOhio is the people's conference, right? I mean, we're not trying to make money off of it. It's just for fun, and it's just to bring people together, and I think that's really awesome.
Do you get any backing support from the Python Software Foundation?
This year, we got a grant to help cover some of the video costs. In previous years, we've gotten grants to cover sprints, some of like the sprint costs.
Yeah.
But the bulk of our money comes from our wonderful sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it so that we can pay for the venue, pay for the videos, pay for the food. And then this year we've asked for donations for the t-shirts, and that's been very, very positively received, and that will also help. So
on top of the sponsors and that kind of stuff, how can the average person help PyOhio?
Two ways. One is volunteering. Obviously, we've had every year, we have so many people that want to help out in whatever ways. I mean, even just when I was coming in today, someone says, hey, what can I do? What can I do? And it's great. So that is a big thing. Many hands make short work, right? So that's a big thing. Obviously, if you are a company or know of a company or sponsors, that's great because, this conference runs on money and time, right? People's time and people's money and whatever we can do. This is my last year as chair. Next year, I'd like to co-chair with somebody. So if someone has the organizational chops, it's basically just being an organizer of volunteers that are doing organizing, right? So basically you just have to be able to spin some plates and help out where there's shortages.
Herd all the cats.
Yeah, herding cats is, yeah, that's about what it is.
And it sounds like you don't have a co-chair yet, then, based on that.
At this point, no.
So this is the call for a co-chair.
Yes. And you know, there are several people that I would like to perhaps recruit in. I don't know how I ended up being a co-chair in you know, on our third year. I don't know how that all happened, but somehow I ended it up there. And I,
surprise.
3 years later, it's like, whoa, wait, how did that happen?
That was a neat transition. Yeah.
I don't remember volunteering.
No, you wouldn't remember anything about that. That was.
But yeah, so that you know, I know we'll talk about the fact that we actually organized. You know, we started out officially with just, you know, Catherine, myself, and Brian, because he's helped out with the organizational stuff, but we want to add board members, so people that have, you know, kind of that time and experience to kind of and shepherd and lead the growth and continuation of PyOhio and expand its mission beyond just a once a year conference. So
what is that future? What is that expanded mission?
The expanded mission is, you know, PyOhio has always been about, you know, bringing people together and helping teach people and have the fellowship and just, you know, talk about why Python's great and how it enables you to do lots of things. And you know, some ways that we want to do it is instead of just having once a year conference, we'd also have little mini things around the Midwest, you know, to bring in women, to bring in minorities, to bring in children. Who maybe don't have the opportunity in their school or their profession to learn about how to take a computer and do something with it besides, you know, just surf the web. You know, Python and programming, I believe, is an enabler, and Python makes it very easy to get into programming, but it's still then, once you're into it, the world is your oyster. I mean, it has so much potential. So we'd like to do some kind of day of Python events, where we help, you know, bring people in that maybe wouldn't have already, you know, known about it or already doing Python, to grow, you know, grow the community and even people that are already in it. You know, when I started CoPy, I didn't realize how many people in Columbus are actually doing Python. You know, so things like that. You know, helping the local organizations.
That sounds like something too that the user groups, CLEPI and CoPy and any of the other user groups in the area could kind of help team up with you.
Absolutely. Too. Yeah, I mean, Catherine can talk more about this, but like with her, you know, Python event and stuff, you know, having a local sponsor, having like the native, you know.
We're definitely expecting locals to be helping with all the efforts, but, you know, we're dreaming of, these little events going on in all sorts of cities around the region, some outside Ohio too, you know, as long as we can get there.
Yeah, this year,
Chicago, Indiana, that kind of.
Absolutely. Stuff. This year, we had speakers from 10 different states and two different countries. We've had attendees from, both coasts, New York and California. I think we have top speakers from both coasts. You know, we've had speakers in Indiana, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama. I can't remember all the other ones, but. It's just amazing that this is a huge regional thing. And
what's the furthest that anybody's traveled to come to PyOhio?
Probably San Francisco.
As far as I know.
Yeah.
That's.
And a couple of people from Toronto, you know, from FreshBooks.
Yeah.
In Toronto there. So, as far as countries. But I would have to say California.
As far as I know. If you've come from further, let us know.
Yes, please.
That's pretty amazing.
It is.
That's a big reach, right? When it started, it was a small reach, and now it's kind of spread out quite a bit.
And I'm really touched that people value PyOhio that much to go that far for us.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, PyOhio, people are, you know, traveling for PyOhio now, you know, like buying plane tickets to come to PyOhio, you know, rather than just kind of hopping in the car, you know, and doing it. So I think that's great.
Now, Brian, you mentioned that you formed a nonprofit corporation to help manage the PyOhio stuff, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, so can you tell us a bit about the motivation and how that works and the mechanics and what it means?
The primary motivation really is fundraising. You know, we just talked a little bit about some things that we'd like to do to sort of spread the word Python. minorities, women. And, you know, to do that, it takes money. And then the conference here, we'd like to continue to grow, but, you know, we're starting to bump up against sort of a fundraising limit on the budget. And so, and then, of course, you have tax issues. You know, one way or another, somebody ends up paying tax on the money that comes in and goes out to run PyOhio, and it's just sort of a loss. So, and then one of the other things that happens is when you go out to ask large companies for money, some of them just flat won't. It's their corporate policy. If you're not actually a charitable entity of some sort, they won't give you the money. Others have tax issues of their own. We're fortunate that a lot of our sponsors can write this off as a type of business expense. If they're here recruiting or if somehow they're marketing what they're doing,
yes,
they can go ahead and write it off anyways. But you sort of close the door on companies that can't take that write-off getting any kind of tax benefit.
Yeah, we're not getting money from the charitable side of Google or the charitable side, you know, Google's not a sponsor, but, you know, large companies have charitable sides that they actually give certain amounts of their budget to. We're not getting those. We're marketing to, the people that are hiring Python people, who want to market to Python people, that kind of thing. So
right, and also it gives us some opportunity to because we are going what we've done is we've incorporated as a nonprofit in the state of Ohio, and we're in the process of getting our 501c3 accreditation from the IRS, which will make us a nonprofit as far as the federal government is concerned. The chapter that we're going to is basically as an educational nonprofit. An actual charity as opposed to like a professional organization. And in addition to, as Eric said, you can deal with the charity side of these businesses. Since we're going to be doing education stuff, there's also the possibility of going after various government grants to fund some of these mini conferences. So that was kind of the motivation. It really is about the fundraising. The process isn't too terrible. There's just a lot of really boring paperwork that you have to do. We're actually, I guess, probably about to find out if the process is going to get terrible. The folks from Ohio Linux Fest actually did some mentoring for me on getting all the paperwork lined up and all the ducks in a row. And so the paperwork is off at the IRS and we're waiting to hear back. They actually had a bit of a problem when they filed theirs. And it largely had to do with the fact that the examiner that caught their paperwork had no clue what open source was. So they wanted to be, as we are filing for, to be a real charity under the education clause. And they kept trying to reclassify them as a professional organization, you know, like an organization of architects or organization of Microsoft SharePoint users or something like that, that, you know, is about, because they just saw Linux as competition to Microsoft, so it must be a business. They didn't get that whole aspect of free software. And to get out of it, they ended up basically filing a bunch of additional paperwork back justifying it. And I mean, if you look at the what they attach to the filing, it's like they have, you know, the Apache license and the new license and a bunch of stuff from the free software guys, including their foundation status and all kinds of stuff like that, so they could, and eventually they got it done. So hopefully we've done the paperwork exactly the way they did and used the wording they ended up rewording stuff as, and we'll just slide through. But we just kind of don't know. The process sometimes goes a week, and then it may go months. It depends on how busy the IRS examiners are and what paperwork's on their desk. So,
if there are other groups out there that are hitting that point where they need to do that, what is the process like? How do you get started? What kind of resources do you need to
It's actually pretty straightforward. Typically, you'll just want to be a corporation. The IRS allows... not other types of businesses, like you can't be a partnership or an LLC, but you can set up a private club in a lot of states, and you can actually turn your private club into a charity, but it tends to be a little bit more straightforward to just do the corporate paperwork. And that's just the same as anywhere else. Usually you fill out a piece of paperwork with the state and file the money, and they send you back paperwork. To actually do the 501c3, you want to go ahead and when you file with the state to incorporate, when you sort of put down the mission of a corporation, you want to be careful about the wording so that it lines up, you know, with that sort of charitable education mission. And then when you do corporate bylaws, and a lot of people think that you absolutely have to do those. Technically, you don't, and the states themselves mostly don't care that you have those when you incorporate. But if you do come under further scrutiny during the process, then that's one of the things typically the IRS will want to look at. So the same thing, when you set up those corporate bylaws, whenever you put in that statement, you need to sort of get in the bylaws. And then you get a ream of IRS paperwork to do. And it's the same thing. You just, it's having the Linux Fest guys, and I'm trying to remember who else. There was somebody else that also gave us paperwork. Do you remember who that was?
Free Geek.
Yeah, it was Free Geek Columbus.
Free Geek, which basically they take an old computer hardware and rehab it for, disadvantaged inner city, kind of.
Yeah, there's just sort of a lot of those little tricky pitfalls as you're walking through that are asking you a bunch of questions about your mission and how you're going to raise money and what you're going to do with the money, and just phrasing something the wrong way like red flags you, and then the process becomes much messier. So it's like if you've ever had somebody talk about if you run your own business from home and you ever get audited and the IRS says, so what percentage of your home office do you use for business and what's for pleasure? And the only right answer is it's 100% for business.
Darn tootin'.
And there's all kinds of stuff in that paperwork where you sort of trip over the same thing. If you're going to, you have to be careful about answering the question about whether board members will receive any compensation. No, none of us get paid. But if you just flat say that, and then when your first set of quarterly paperwork comes out, it turns out that you did pay out expenses to everyone because they incurred expenses. They went and bought stuff on their own dime, and you paid them back. Well, whoops, you just filed contradictory paperwork, and now they're mad because in your initial filing you said that you weren't going to give any money to the board members, and you just did. So it's little things like that that you just have to, it's tedious. And then cost-wise, depending on, the level of attorney services you use, you can go from I'm just doing this all on my own and rolling the dice to I'm going to get somebody to look at it after I'm done, which is what I did to do it all for me. So there's whatever that fee is, and then in Ohio it's a couple hundred bucks to file the incorporation paperwork, and it's $850 to file the IRS paperwork. So you have to have a little bit of money to get it rolling.
How much time did it take? How long has this road been?
Because time is money.
Time-wise, it's been calendar-wise longer than I'd like. I keep kind of getting distracted with some other stuff. But hour-wise, in terms of just sort of doing all the reading online and going through the Linux Fest paperwork, talking to the lawyer, all that, I probably have about, maybe 30 hours into it at this point.
Okay.
Something like that. It was, some learning process. And I think if you've done some stuff like that before, it'll go quicker. Mm-hmm.
So what challenges do you guys see for PyOhio right now? What are the stumbling blocks that there might be that need help to overcome or that need to move forward?
Especially as we grow, right? As we try to do this, other events and other things.
Yes. Well, yeah.
What do you see as the challenges?
Getting people that have the time to lead, events and things like that. PyOhio, like Brian says, we have fundraising is a big challenge. We have hard costs that we have to pay. We pay very little for venue and stuff like that because we are sponsored and our host is the OSU Open Source Club. But as we get bigger, obviously we need more space, we need more food, and so one of PyOhio's missions, I think, is to remain a free conference and to remain the best and awesomest free conference in the world. So money is going to be an issue. People's time is an issue. Those are really what drive PyOhio. And as PyOhio gets bigger, the organizational commitment is greater. We need more volunteers. We need more people to be able to make decisions and lead and all that. The other thing is really publicity, for these little events and stuff, we need to bring people in. We don't need to just talk to the people that we already talked to. We need to talk to other people and find other ways to reach people that aren't already reached.
Yeah.
So
the whole point is to get outside the circles that we're already all moving in. And so that'll be interesting figuring out ways to do that.
Yep.
So
Sorry.
No, go ahead. Now I'm done.
Okay. So this is PyOhio number 5?
Yes.
This
yes.
year? Okay. Where do you see in your imagination, your wildest dreams, what does PyOhio number 10 look like?
Wow. Floating cars.
Jetpacks.
Sky City. PyCon is jealous.
Yeah, I haven't thought that far ahead. I've only thought to today. Yeah. I'm thinking about lightning talks right now.
Yeah.
That's all I'm thinking about.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm seeing a whole lot of radical change in PyOhio itself, but I think I want to see an impact in that, you know, because of PyOhio and all these associated events going on, that Columbus and Ohio in general increasingly become known as one of the kind of centers of the Python world, mm-hmm. you know? I'd like to have the point where one corporate planner is saying to another, well, you know, if we locate in Ohio, we can get access to a great Python talent pool.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. You know, one of the things that, you know, this is kind of selfish, but, you know, I don't want to have to move out to San Francisco, right? I mean, you know, there's been a number of Central Ohio Python users group members, you know, that have moved out to, you know, outside of this area. And I would love for this area to be known as a, you know, technology hotbed, to whatever degree it can. And, you know, again, that would be great. So PyOhio 10, you know, I would love to be, you know, 10 times bigger.
Fill up the whole Ohio Union.
I would love for there to be more, you know, more things going on, more self-organization. You know, there's lots of great hallway conversations and the sprints and stuff like that. I would love for us to be like kind of the Burning Man or the Woodstock of Python. You know, people just come and things just kind of sprout, you know. I would love for that to happen. I don't know, you know, it does happen, but, you know, at 10 times the scale.
But mostly, you
just
know,
to be fun and enjoyable.
Yeah, we're going to see what happens, because it's not really the sort of thing where a secret committee plans everything and then apps.
Right.
People show up and make PyCon.
Yeah.
Or PyOhio, sorry. That too. Oh. And we'll see.
So, maybe 2018, you know, PyCon's going to be in Ohio, right?
There,
you know?
Works for me.
You know, Montreal, it's Montreal next 2 years after next year.
Right.
And then probably someplace on the western coast, and then after that we could come to Ohio.
That's right. We think we'll be ready. Maybe.
Yeah.
Build up the community so we can host it. Yeah.
So
it starts today.
Put that
right?
in the back in your mind, right there.
add that to my pile of to-dos for my copious spare time.
There you go. Yes, yes, you'll be the chairman of.
Oh, oh no!
2 years.
I still have some hair that's not gray.
Yeah, but we have about the same amount of gray, I think.
Excellent. Well, this is actually the first year I've been able to get down here, and I felt so guilty about not doing it. I made you guys a logo long ago and never managed to even get down here. I always felt dumb about it.
Well, thanks for the logo.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's an awesome logo.
Yeah, whatever. I'd like to see somebody do something better. always a critic but of my own stuff. But anyway, do you guys want to talk about Eric's talk since he was speaking today? Were either of you speaking today?
I wasn't, no.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I missed your talk, too, because I was doing the hallway track thing.
Oh, I know. I did the hallway track this year, too, so. So, so I'll give you a five-second rundown or five-minute rundown, whatever. So, basically, I had a webcam, and I pointed it out a window, and I had a cron job pull out an image every minute, and that was 2 years ago, and you know, now I have about 1 million images, 900,000, you know, images, and I wanted to kind of play around with that. You know, obviously with 900,000 images, you're not going to do anything manually. You're not going to manually scan the images for interesting things. So I think I also have kind of a little bit of a creative side, and so I took some of those images and did kind of some creative stuff with them. I also used some of those images, you know, because it was 24 hours a day to take pictures at night. And, you know, interesting things is hard to define, right? I want to find images that have interesting things going on in them. And that's kind of hard to find, but at night it's easy because brightness is a proxy for interesting. you know. So I wanted to find areas of images that were taken at night that were brighter than the surrounding background. So basically I would stack all the images together and black would indicate interesting things. And then I would look for every day and I would say if there's interesting things. You know, so I'd see the track of the moon as it's setting. The webcam was had a good enough CCD on it that you could see Venus and sometimes Jupiter. So you could see those tracks, but there were some interesting things I found too with that. I also took all the images, all 900,000 of them, and made each image a single pixel by taking the median value of color of the image and plotted that on an XY scale, where X scale would be minutes in a day and the Y scale would be days. So each row of the image was one single day. And you plot that over 2 years, you can see how the day gets shorter and the day gets longer. So I did all this kind of fun stuff with it.
Was that the mystery image that you tweeted the other day?
Yes, that was okay. The mystery image. Yeah, so that was all images, all 2 years. And it showed how in the wintertime, you know, day gets shorter and it gets longer and you can actually exactly see how that works. Yeah, so that was the mystery
really cool.
image. Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea what that was. Thanks for explaining that.
I looked at it for a second and sort of crossed my eyes and assumed it was a sailboat, but...
it's
a schooner.
It's like a... Yeah, what's it with the...
The magic eye type stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been fun to do. I like to play with, you know, data, and so that was fun to play with.
Did you find any aliens or UFOs or... Can you confirm or deny any of these rumors?
I can confirm that I did find a couple UFOs. I don't know if those UFOs were alien spacecraft, but there were a few anomalous things that were discovered over the past 2 years, especially anomalous considering that it only takes one image every minute, you know, so it's not like it's a continuous thing.
Yeah.
So in the future, I hope to have higher resolution, taking them on a faster schedule, not like maybe... 6 images a minute or 10 images a minute instead of 1 every minute. So I have a little bit higher fidelity on that to kind of see how long, you know, because right now, like if it shows up in a single image, it could have been there for as long as 3 minutes, right? From immediately after the 1 minute picture was taken to immediately after the minute after it was taken, you know, so I don't know what, you know, did it move in the sky? Did it get bright really quickly and then leave? Was it a cosmic ray that hit a CCD sensor? You know, I don't know. But it's kind of cool. So
what's the most interesting thing you found in all of that stuff?
Well, I personally think it's all interesting, but I really thought it was cool. I used Brandon Craig Rhodes' PyFM library, and thank you, Brandon, to basically get a picture of the sun at a certain height above the horizon. And the way I did that was, okay, if I know what time... the sun's going to set, and it sets at a different time every day. I use the PyFM library to, and that's not FM, it's EPHEM, like ephemerides, to find the picture of that day that was about an hour before sunset, and then I stitch those together into a movie, and so you could actually, as the webcam is pointed at the same location in the sky, you see the sun moving left and right, you know, and that really shows the tilt of the earth and how over a year period of time the sun moves. And that was something, you know, that Native Americans, Mayan, you know, ancient people knew, and they used that even before they had writing systems. They used that to determine when to plant, when to harvest, when to start making preparations. Because they didn't have writing, they didn't make a calendar. You know, they knew... the sun told them when they needed to, because if you're in January and you have a warm spell and you think, oh yeah, spring's coming, let's plant. Oh, wait a second, no, now it all of a sudden got colder again. You know from the sun, and the position of the sun is a better indicator than anything else to determine when you need to do things. And that's something we've lost when we're sitting in our computer in our basement, you know, like where my office is in the basement. You know, I never see the sun. So I thought that was cool.
Pretty neat.
And do you have any of the code from that where people can play with it?
I do.
Resources if people want to try a similar kind of experiment?
Yep, I got it on Bitbucket, and my talk is on Bitbucket. The URL to the talk, which then you can look through the slides to see where the other things are, is bit.ly, bit.ly/ OSPW, and that stands for Observational Science with Python and Webcam. So OSPW, lowercase, dash talk, T-A-L-K.
Awesome.
And that will be my slide presentation, and then everything else you can kind of branch out
from there. Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll make sure we print that in the show notes too, so we get link straight there and all that.
Excellent. Yeah.
Excellent. Cool. Yep. All right. Well, I think we're running out of time. We've got to get our organizers back to the lightning talks, which start in about 3 minutes.
All right.
So thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
From Python Import Podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 license. Our music is by Jonathan Colton. To learn more, visit jonathancolton.com. For more awesome, check us out at frompythonimportpodcast.com.
Woohoo!
Should we plan what we're gonna do, or should we just wing this shit?